What's up? Welcome back to the Gavin Podcast. It's not Gavin with Liam this week. It's just the Gavin Podcast. I know I said that last week while I was recording that I was very sure Liam would be back this week. Well, I was wrong. It's syllabus week. He's so busy and he's living his best life in Italy. So it's just me again today, which is awesome. I know. Cue the laugh, not the laugh track. Cue the applause track. Whoa, Gavin's back. So exciting. But I got some good stuff for us today. I have a pretty good amount of things to talk about. But yeah, it should be a good episode. It's very cold here right now. It's Alexa, what's the low today?
It's like the low of minus 14 degrees.
Minus 14! It's so cold. Right now it's like 5 degrees out, which is absurd. Absurd. I'm going to need a ski mask if I want to skateboard at all today. But my face hurts. Like, it actually hurts to touch my face because of how stingy it was outside. But, you know, I digress. Anyways, let's get into the thing that is Broadway, which is what we love to talk about here on this show. Bane Griffith joins MJ as one half of the Little Michaels. He's taking over for... what was the other kid's name? He actually signed my playbill when I went and saw the show. He was great. But new Little Michael splitting that with... Christian, I want to say the other little kid's name is, who is also splitting Little Michael, which is great. MJ also celebrated the 1 year anniversary on Broadway, which is pretty cool. And there was a school production of Spelling Bee deemed, quote, inappropriate, which many speculate is just because one of the characters in the show has two gay dads. This was a production of Spelling Bee that was supposed to be going on at a high school. And a lot of the parents complained and people went to the school and was like, this is not appropriate for us. And Jesse Tyler Ferguson, who was a part of the company of Spelling Bee, made a TikTok basically talking about how upset he was about this because there's rewrites and there's revisions to be able to do this show at a school. It's actually one of the most produced musicals at middle and high school, maybe not middle schools, but in high schools at least, just because of how relatable this content is and how easy it is to take out. There's a song about a boy having an erection and that's easily taken out of the show. There's a little bit of swearing that can get altered, but it is... not a show that should be deemed inappropriate, but a lot of people are speculating that's just because one of the characters has two gay dads and a lot of people didn't like that, which is really, really sad and frustrating to see that we're now having to deal with, which I empathize with those involved in this production because I'm sure it had nothing to do with the kids involved or anyone trying to make the show happen. So Jesse did say that he was going to try to get like a Zoom together or something with the cast from Spelling Bee to talk to these kids just to you know, try to cheer them up and make sure that they know that they're loved and that they have their back and everything. So the Broadway production of Shucked has announced that Tony nominee Gray Henson is going to be joining the company, which is really cool. We still don't know too much about the plot of this show and like really what's going to happen with Shucked. But previews start on March 8th and tickets for this run at the Nederlander are relatively cheap, starting at about $69. I was able to find some orchestra seats for even cheaper. This is during my spring break trip. So far, I'm slated to see Parade, Sweeney Todd, and Hercules, and maybe some like It Hot or a different show if I'm feeling crazy. But Shucked and Camelot both don't have matinees on the Wednesday that I'm there. So I'm not going to be able to see either of those shows, which sucks. But I'm very excited for Shucked and just for all that can come with this production. I know a lot of people in the Broadway community, really, we just don't know what this show's about. We really don't know at the moment what the vibe of this show is. You know, you can speculate it's country because of the corn, and I'm sure there's plenty of puns in the show, but then again, who's to say? Very excited to see what comes out of previews here. Again, those start at March 8th at the Nederlander. Go get your tickets for Shucked. Casting was completed for the upcoming revival of Parade, speaking of. But what I didn't notice from before, I guess Paul Alexander Nolan was in the company from City Center, which I love Paul Alexander Nolan. So he's a part of the company again. I just wanted to mention that because I would have mentioned it on here if I noticed beforehand. But notably new to the production, who I recognized was Jake Peterson, who's departing the Wicked Tour as Bach to now play Frankie Epps, which is pretty cool. And Parade is loading in to the Jacobs Theater as we speak. And it is very exciting. It's going to be a very exciting production. I'm going to be able to see it in the first few weeks of its run, of its limited engagement. It might even be during previews. I don't remember what day they open. But this is just, I kind of project this show to do really, going to be like Into the Woods, where once it's open and once it's going and once it's running, it's going to have some really great ticket sales. There might be a spot or a stretch here where we don't see them selling more than, you know, 90% of their capacity. But I think at least for the time being, Parade is going to do really, really well, because the run of this show is like 20 weeks or something. It's like quite a few weeks. I guess that's not that many. Well, yeah, it's like 5 months. I don't know. They have it advertised on the side of the theater. It's like such and such limited engagement, but I couldn't tell you exactly how many weeks that is. So I'm very excited to see the financials of that. I will definitely, Liam and I will make our predictions on opening night for that to see how long. Oh no, because it's a limited engagement, but we got to make our predictions for upcoming openings such as Bad Cinderella, which we're very excited to make our predictions for of how long we think that show will run. And maybe I'll make some predictions for if I think Parade will recoup, how much money I think they will make. I saved all their financial information so I can go back and kind of calculate each week and try to project when I think they would recoup their investment, because I think that would be a very cool segment to have on the show. Let me know. Who knows? The Wiz has announced that the scenic design is going to be helmed by Hannah Beechler, who won an Academy Award for the production design of Black Panther, which is really, really cool. I know a lot of people, like Broadway Worlds and Playbill, posted articles about this, just because this is exactly the kind of person you want in your creative team for this show. Just perfect. As well as Emmy Award-winning costume designer from Watchmen and Dreamgirls, Sharon Davis, is also joining the team. Just, if you can just have more people who have credits like this and who have worked on such brilliant productions such as these, you're really shaping The Wiz up to be a fantastic revival. I already can see The Wiz sticking around for quite a while on Broadway. It's definitely one of the more anticipated revivals coming. It's not going to be for a while, you know, at least a year now. But it's going to be awesome when it gets here. It's going to be really, really cool, especially if they can get some really good casting in there and just fill it with some all around great talent. It'd be awesome. Leslie Odom Jr. is coming back to Broadway this summer in the first revival of Pearly Victorious, a non-Confederate romp through the cotton patch. From Logan Colwell Block's Playbill article, quote, the work follows a traveling preacher, Pearly, who returns to his Georgia hometown to save the local church and cotton pickers working on the old Captain Crotchapie's plantation. No space or dates have been announced yet. This is all we know, is that Leslie is going to be helming this. But again, Leslie Odom Jr. has been a busy guy and has been doing some really great work. And again, this is similar to The Wiz, where it's like, once you can get enough of these really credible people working on this, it's kind of like New York, New York. We don't know too much about it, but a lot of people, it's like, yes, it's Kander and Ebb, but like, once you get the Lin-Manuel seal of approval, and once he is like, yo, I'm going to work on this and help a little bit with it, everyone's like, oh, well, of course it's going to be amazing because we trust him. Like, a lot of investors on Broadway and a lot of people on Broadway will just throw money at Lin-Manuel Miranda because they believe he can do no wrong. I personally think he'll have at least one flop in his time. But I think Lin is in for just so many hits. I'm very excited for New York, New York. This opens or starts previews right after I'm going to leave the city in a few months, which is really sad. But maybe I can find a slime tutorial or something and watch this at some point. Or maybe just see it if I can make another trip this summer or in the fall. Who knows? But Leslie Odom Jr. and Pearly Victorious, very cool, very exciting stuff. The Tony Awards committee also made some rulings this week. This is probably one of the bigger pieces of news that I have for us this week, just because the way that that Tony Award category voting works is, you know, if someone's billed above the title of the show, if it says Ben Platt and Michaela Diamond in Parade, those people are automatically going to be considered for Best Actor and Actress in a Leading Role in a Musical. But sometimes people are billed above the title when they are not. Then they shouldn't really be considered because they're not featured or they're not leading roles. So in this case, Gavin Creel, Joshua Henry, and Philippa Sue are going to be considered for featured roles because those roles that they're playing are featured in the show, even though they are billed above the title, and vice versa. There's a few people that are not billed above the title that are going to now be considered for best for leading roles. I don't know if Christian Borle and J. Harrison Gee, let me look. Some Like It Hot musical. They might actually be. Let me see. Let me look at this poster. They're not, from what I'm looking at. So that's why they made a ruling that Christian Borle and J. Harrison Gee are going to be considered for Best Actor in a Leading Role in a Musical. Even though J identifies as non-binary, this is another pretty large conversation as to people were expecting the Tony Awards when they were going to come out with these rulings and give us a little bit more information as to what the award ceremony is going to look like this year. A lot of people had anticipated, okay, well, now we can finally get away with gendered categories, or at least find some alternative and some solution that we can have here to be able to be inclusive of everyone and be able to include these non-binary performers that want to be considered for awards but don't want to have to pick. So there are two performers here who were kind of at the spotlight of this, Jay being one of them, who basically came out and was like, I don't want to make rules. I'm not going to directly quote this, but the gist that I was getting was that Jay was like, I don't want to make rules specific for me. He's like, this is going to take some time. I know this can't happen overnight. Jay's like, I'll be considered for best actor in a leading role. And I don't need to have rules changed just for me. Yes, it would be great, but I don't specifically need this for me right now. But on the flip side, Anne Juliet's Justin David Sullivan withdrew this week from Tony consideration. Quote, I was told that I had to choose the category in which I felt comfortable, and in that process, I struggled a lot, Sullivan told Playbill. There's nothing more that I want to empower than non-binary people. To show that it's possible to be non-binary on Broadway, play a non-binary character on Broadway, and be nominated and possibly potentially awarded. I felt like I couldn't choose. I didn't feel right being in either category because it didn't resonate with me. I decided the only thing that felt right to me would be to abstain from nomination consideration. So I will not be considered for a Tony nomination, which is really, you know, sad and frustrating. Just that the Tony committee basically came to Justin and was like, you must now pick. Would you like to be considered for actor in a leading role in a musical or actress or featured? I think their character is, but. And they were just like, I can't choose. I can't, like, you can't make me pick, which for some people like Jay, it's like, yeah, sure, I can pick one. It's not how I identify, but it's how I would like to be considered for an award. But when the whole point of being non-binary is to say, hey, I don't feel like I fit into either of these boxes. I'm not very binary in this way. And then the Tony Awards just shows up and knocks at their door. It doesn't actually knock at their door, but it's like, hey, you must now pick. And it's like, well, this is how I've chosen to live my life is to not pick a side and not put myself into this box. And now you're asking me to do literally what I do not identify as, which I can't imagine how frustrating that is. And now Justin David Sullivan can't be considered for a Tony just because they just didn't want to not be true to who they are, which is sad and frustrating. But that's not quite the most sad and frustrating thing. Not the most sad frustrating thing, but not the only. So the Tony Awards also came out with a statement at the end of all of their rulings, which was to basically change a rule for this season specifically. So they're now going to be allowing Tony voters to vote in categories in which they haven't seen up to one of the things that they're voting on. This can be one in the performance category, one in the creative category, and one for the show as a whole. For example, if they're voting on best actor in a leading role in a musical, and Christian Borle was out that night, the night that they saw the production, they could have seen the rest of the nominees and not have seen Christian Borle in the show and still cast a vote in that category. What this is trying to combat is similar to last year. I was having a conversation with Brian the BA on TikTok this week, where last year a lot of people were not able to see Jacquel Spivey in A Strange Loop because Jacquel was out in June and July, or maybe it was early spring, when the Tony Awards voters are going to be seeing these shows and are going to be informing themselves on how they should vote, and they didn't get to see Jacquel, so now they can't vote in this category, which decreases the amount of voters that we have, which can kind of sway the decision one way or another based on, you know, if all these people didn't see Jacquel, well, then they can't vote for him, and now it's just kind of unfair. So I understand to an extent why they made this decision, but to me, why I don't get it. I don't understand why we can't just increase the amount of Tony voters that we have instead of keeping the same amount of Tony voters, but now limiting just how accurate it could actually be to how good of a vote this could be. I mean, there's a lot of times where the Tony Awards will give out awards that are really just not in conjunction with what the general public thinks, or specifically what the Broadway community thinks. Specifically, the 2017 Tony Awards, when Dear Evan Hansen won, there's larger groups that would argue Come From Away, and larger groups that would argue The Great Comet, that would argue Dear Evan Hansen, which was the musical that actually won. You know, we could have this conversation forever because so many people are opinionated on this conversation into the Tony voters just don't get it right a lot of the time. And again, if the Tony voters vote a certain way after seeing all the shows, I'm fine with it. They saw all the shows, they made their decisions, all of them, the majority of them agreed that this should be the best musical. But I don't know how you can vote on the best musical if you didn't see all the musicals, in my opinion. That just doesn't, I don't know, that just doesn't sit too right with me, and it doesn't really make sense, especially if you're not allowed to vote on one show, and Ohio State Murders only ran for a little while. Yeah, the chances of you seeing that show aren't good because it didn't run for very long. You could vote on Into the Woods easily because that ran all fall, but or all fall and up until January. But if you, I don't know, if you're gonna vote on these smaller shows, I feel like you have to have seen them all. I'm sure there's more to this conversation that I don't know and understand because it's very complicated. I tried to understand enough about it as much as I could, but at the end of the day, if you're voting on something, like if I'm a Tony Awards, if I'm a performer on Broadway, and I'm up for best actor in a leading role in a musical, yeah, I want you to have seen my performance if you're voting in the category. Like, at least let me plead my case and at least let me give you my performance. And I understand it is to eliminate some sort of factor that I don't understand and do not have enough of an understanding yet. I just said understand pretty much twice, but I don't know. It's just weird. And maybe more will come out from this, and maybe I can do more research, but I really tried to educate myself as much as I could on this decision. But I don't know. It just doesn't make sense. But that's all I had for the news this week. So I could jump over to the grosses. If Liam was here, he would say that's gross. And surprisingly, it was a pretty okay week. I mean, nothing really changed from last week. The biggest swing in dollar amounts was The Lion King was down $109,000, which was the biggest decrease. They were down 13.5%, which no show was down more than that. Nothing was really, everything kind of broke even this week. Everything really kind of, not broke even, but made the same amount of money, grossed the same amount of money as they did last week. The most expensive show to see this week was Funny Girl at $203 ticket average, and their top ticket was $549. The ticket average did go up 1%. It is now $124.50-ish to go see a show. Grosses were down 1%, which as a total, that's nothing. For it being the dead of January, if we can consistently stay where we're at and not just keep falling and keep declining, I'm okay with that. Attendance did go up 1% this week, which is good. We only had one show to sell out this week, was surprisingly Hamilton. Over the fall, we weren't seeing Hamilton sell out really at all. But I mean, hey, Hamilton's doing the thing. The shows in my mind that pretty much sold out are the shows that gross above 98%. And we had a lot of shows to pretty much sell out. And Juliet at 98, Chicago at 98. Hadestown at 98.5, MJ at 99.9. They were 16 tickets away from selling out. So I'm calling that a sellout, MJ. Moulin Rouge at just about 99, Book of Mormon at 98, and the Phantom of the Opera at 99.9. Let's see, they were 12 tickets away from selling out. So again, nothing to worry about there. As well as The Piano Lesson in its final week was at 99.8. and Wicked at 98%. The show that grossed the most compared to last week was Take Me Out, stretching into their final weeks of their run. They do close in 2 days from now. But these numbers are for the second to last week of their run, which is the Tony Award-winning Best Revival of a Play. Their ticket sales jumped from 76 to about 85.5, which is really good. That's up 9.5%, just about, and grossed had the best week over week gross at 16%, which you love to see because Take Me Out's been struggling for quite a while now, hence why they're closing. And this is their second go around. So, you know, you can't always guarantee demand is going to be here for this show, especially given the fact that they're in their second go of this show, which is wild. Everything else pretty much broke even. Some bigger swings, like in grosses. Chicago's grosses were down 6%. Sixes was down 5%. Lion King's was down 6%. Oh no. Oh, I'm sorry. I was spewing facts about the Lion King being down 109% and being down 13.5%. This is for the collaboration. The collaboration is the one who had the worst week this week. My apologies. Down 9.2%. They went from grossing 89 points, selling 89.6 of their house to now being at 80%, which, you know, isn't atrocious, but it's not really what you want to see, which caused their grosses to fall 13.5%. The collaboration is going into... Is this the final week? They've extended so many times, I can't remember. I think next week's their final week, which would make more sense than them selling 80% of their house. This is also, at a glance, the most affordable show to go see right now. No, Pictures from Home at $72, just about $73 ticket average. This is at $78 ticket average, which, you know, still pretty much the same thing. We had one more performance this week on Broadway, so everything played a full 8. The only thing last week that didn't play a full 8 was Pictures from Home played 7, and then they played 8. So now we have 184 performances happened this week. We have the same amount of shows, nothing opened, nothing closed, which is pretty good, which means that, yeah, grosses are going to be pretty much where they were last week. And, yeah, I think if a lot of these shows are very close to selling out, these heavy hitters are really... The way that Broadway economics work, just as a little side note, is it follows the 60-40 rule, where... or maybe it's 80-20. I don't exactly remember. But basically, 60% of Broadway's gross or Broadway's revenue is made up by 40% of the shows. It might even be 80-20. I can't exactly remember that statistic, but it's like, you know, your MJs and your Hamiltons and your Hadestowns, Funny Girl, Wicked, Phantom, Lion King, those are making up the majority of the money that is coming into Broadway, and the rest of the shows that are much smaller really don't compare. I mean, you have to have like 5 or 6 Pictures from Home to make up Wicked or make up especially Hamilton. And so now Hamilton really seems to kind of be back on top. This show has been on top in the grosses for a while, but the show that did gross the most this week was The Phantom of the Opera at $2.48 million, which is crazy. No show was even close. That was the only show to break 2 million this week, which is very, very, very awesome. The Phantom is going to continue to do this and is going to continue to sell out. I am curious as to why they didn't sell, you know, the 12 tickets that could have been sold. Excuse me. But that's really all I have for today. If Liam was here, we could have had much more laughs, much more fun. I miss him a lot. But he's having fun in Italy. You can go give him a follow at Liam Ellis on Instagram to see all of his great travel content. If you really want to see his travel content, you can follow Meals Liam Eats on Instagram. He's been posting all of the glorious things he's been eating while he's been abroad in Italy thus far. And everything looks really, really yummy. Some nice pizza, some nice gelato, whatnot. He also posted a cool video of him scootering. But love and miss you, Liam. Liam will be back next week. Mark my words. I will make it happen. He will make it happen. And yeah, see you next time. Sorry for the short episode, but, you know, got everything in that I needed to. See you next week. Bye.